Hello, everyone.
I'm
And
Carl.
I'm Em.
And welcome to our podcast discussing all the latest books. This is season 3, episode 4. And today we are discussing The Deal by L. Kennedy. As always, we will save our ratings to the very end.
We promise to give you all of our honest opinions and all the characters, chapters, and scenarios. We don't mean any harm to any of the authors. This is solely our opinion. And as always, we promise to Carl and like reread them.
Period. So, some trigger warnings for this episode and book include, here we go, sexual assault, domestic violence, abuse, child abuse, misogyny, sexism, explicit sexual content on the page, for certain. There is some violence with the hockey and some injuries related to that, injuries related to the domestic violence as well. There are several times that the word rape itself is used, so if that word itself triggers anybody, you should be aware of that. Related to her assault, it references like an unsatisfactory response with the like law enforcement and stuff that can be triggering, and then what happens to her family because of it, so like the isolation and bullying, that sort of thing. And then I guess blackmail is another one, or extortion. I don't know which one it would qualify under, from the dad. As always, take care of yourselves and check them yourself before you dive in, and spoilers may lie ahead.
So if you don't want to hear how this book ends, please pause here, go read the book, and then come back to this episode. And I also want to include that this is a series, but each book is kind of like a standalone. It's about a different character, each book in the entire series. But I'm sure there's probably, we haven't read further into the series, or at least I haven't, so I don't know if it's important that you read each book in order that it was written, or if it's, you know, able to be read out of order. But say start with this, it's a good starting point at least, and you know, kind of go from there.
I have read book 2 so far, starting book 3 soon. For book 2, I didn't have to have read book 1 to read book 2, but there were some things that wouldn't have probably made sense if you hadn't read book 1. I will say though, so there's 4 books that are standalone interconnected series, and then there's a 5th book, but the 5th book is actually like the future of all 4 couples. So obviously if you're going to read that 5th book, you probably need to read all 4 couples. But anyways,
okay. You ready to get started?
Let's get into it. All right, so the blurb for this book. She's about to make a deal with a college bad boy. Hannah Wells has finally found someone who turns her on. But while she might be confident in every other area of her life, she's carting around a full set of baggage when it comes to sex and seduction. If she wants to get her crush's attention, she'll have to step out of her comfort zone and make him take notice, even if it means tutoring the annoying, childish, cocky captain of the hockey team in exchange for a pretend date. And it's going to be oh so good. All Garrett Graham has ever wanted is to play professional hockey after graduation, but his plummeting GPA is threatening everything he's worked so hard for. If helping a sarcastic brunette make another guy jealous will lift his grades and secure his position on the team, he's all for it. But when one unexpected kiss leads to the wildest sex of both their lives, it doesn't take long for Garrett to realize that pretend isn't going to cut it. Now he just has to convince Hannah that the man she wants looks a lot like him.
Well, whenever Garrett gets upset, he goes to the restroom. He doesn't realize he's left Hannah alone. But her ex, Devin, who actually dumped her because she couldn't orgasm, which kind of dumb reason. But anyways, so he ends up coming to the bar with his new girlfriend. And Hannah does end up running away, kind of fighting tears. And she ends up running into in the hallway, and he, you know, is really upset because he left her and didn't realize what he was doing. And just kind of talks about how she's kind of hopeless about having a normal relationship, and she just decides to get drunk, drown herself in her problems. So Garrett does end up, whenever the party shifts to his house, he does take Hannah upstairs and kind of gives her some ibuprofen, some water and stuff. And she kind of mutters to herself something about being broken. And so Garrett just is not quite sure what it means, but she falls asleep. He goes back downstairs, drinks pretty heavily, and then goes back upstairs. And Hannah actually ends up making a move. I actually, as I was reading the scene where Garrett went back downstairs and got drunk, I was like, oh my God, please do not rape her. Please do not, like, make a move on her. Like, I just instantly went to that kind of space.
Worst case scenario. Yeah,
because honestly, at this point, I still didn't know which one was Garrett. I didn't know if he was the sweet guy or if he was this guy that like was like, you know, thinking all girls want him.
I think he might be both.
Yeah. So he does stop her and he tells her that, you know, basically, you know, he can't do that. And she's kind of touched by it and just decides to go to sleep. But when she wakes in the morning, she just kind of blurts out and wakes him up and asks him if they can have sex. And he's kind of caught off guard, but of course he's a man and not going to turn it down. So...
But of course he's a man and he's not going to turn it down. That's accurate. Accurate
to say. So they decide that they're going to do it that evening. And so...
That right there is weird to me.
Yeah.
Him just like letting it happen organically?
Yeah. Just don't plan it. And...
No. Especially if she already has anxiety about orgasming. Like that to me makes it worse.
Well, and he does agree after she tells him that she was raped. So... Like that, I feel like that's a lot to unpack, just kind of learning that this person has gone through this, to then just be like, oh, sure, let's do it tonight. It's a little, I think, premature. So, Logan is a little frustrated because Garrett kind of denied that he was interested in Hannah, and now all of a sudden he is. So he does ask for an exemption to the bro code, you know, if things don't work out. Garrett kind of agrees, but he's just, you know, saying it's never going to happen. But at that point, too, he does ask for advice again from Birdie. He does, though, as, like, somebody who's a virgin rather than somebody who's a rape victim out of respect for Hannah. And he just kind of talks about how, you know, take it slow, focus on making her comfortable, you know, kind of conversation. So when she gets there, she's ready to go. And Garrett is just like, let's, you know, sit.
She's ready to go.
She is. And he's just, you know, hey, put something comfortable on. Let's, you know, sit down, watch. He does very much, you know, kind of comfort her. They do get to... perform some oral acts. I guess it's a PG way of saying it, but
I don't know, that was very PG.
But every time she gets close to climaxing, she gets flashbacks, and so he realizes that, you know, for her to trust him, she may not feel safe. So they did to become super vulnerable and masturbate in front of each other. Garrett actually says that it's kind of like a vulnerable thing that he's never had to go through. It's a weird situation. And then he's just like baby steps afterwards. And
I thought it was, I didn't know we were going to get into those details. That's why I'm laughing. I did think though, it was very nice and sweet of him.
I think it was very, considerate. Yes, that's the word I was looking for.
To go through those steps to help her relax and become more comfortable and trust him more in that aspect before they just attempted the whole thing.
Allie does ask again if her and Garrett are dating. Denies it, says they're just fooling around. Allie's kind of thrilled because she's not really, you know, seen Hannah go through anything since her ex. And Hannah is also kind of feeling guilty about the upcoming date with Justin. She's kind of wanting to cancel it, but she just kind of brushing it off, pushing it off, and deciding to wait. She does at the showcase end up having the introduction of a celloist that bullied as well by Cass. And she just at this point, whenever Cass is just kind of demanding too much, kind of has given up at the fact that she's going to win the showcase and just decides that it's probably going to be next year. After rehearsal, though, Garrett is out there waiting for her, and he does kind of get a little sassy with Cass, and he calls him by the wrong name, and he just kind of warns him, don't take advantage of Hannah. And Hannah's just kind of a little spicy a little bit about it, but then all of a sudden they like gaze into each other's eyes and are overcome with lust and decide to go back to Garrett's place. So.
Yeah, it was.
It was a little weird.
Again, this is going to be like my phrase for this entire episode. It could have been done better.
Yes. But then also when they go back to Garrett's and, you know, she has an orgasm for the first time in a while, or ever since the rape at least, she begins to, and, you know, she's like moved by the fact that they had a breakthrough. Garrett basically decides they're not going to take anything further, still take baby steps. And so while he goes to practice, Hannah does decide to surprise his roommates and him by cooking dinner, which I did find it so sweet how they were so touched by the gesture. And so they sit, have kind of like a family pocky team dinner. They do.
They sit and have like a family hockey team dinner.
I mean, I didn't know what else to call it.
You're like a robot.
I was trying to think of the...
A family hockey team
I was trying dinner. To think of the words to use.
I know, it's just funny. Like, you kept family hockey team. Like, we get it.
Bite me.
That's not my kink. Sorry.
So, Hannah does end up canceling her plans on Halloween because Garrett has decided to stay home. And so...
This was a cute scene.
It was. When she goes, she talks about how she's kind of disappointed at the fact that her family can't come again for Christmas. This is the part where Garrett does make the comment. I believe the quote was something along the lines of, his father is wealthy, but he himself is not, kind of implying that, you know, he's broke. And so Hannah does confide in him what actually happens, talks about how her family's, you know, not very wealthy because of what all happens, and just kind of goes into the details with that. And then Garrett does kind of decide to give her something as well and talks about the abuse that he endured by his father's hand, and also his mother endured by her father, his father's hands as well. At the end of the conversation, or they do have sex for the first time. And then Garrett at the end of the night does ask Hannah to come the next day to Harvard, to play or watch the game play. She does start talking about the fact that she's kind of forgot all about Justin, implying that. And she talks about how she's not sure if she wants to abandon her crush and continue with Garrett, or, you know, just kind of keep both options open. Outside the arena, Hannah is with Garrett, and he does kiss her in front of all of her friends. And Garrett's father does end up appearing and asks to speak to him privately. And his father basically insists that he comes home for Thanksgiving, that his new girlfriend would like him to be there. And he basically threatens him that if he doesn't come, he'll cut off all financial support. So Garrett has no choice to comply because he doesn't have access to his trust yet.
It's absolute, like, okay, I'm not going to lie to you, okay? This entire book, all this talk about cutting off and can't afford and her parents had to pay for her school. Do you know what I thought about this entire book? Take out some damn student loans.
Well,
it's not the end of the world.
Well, his dad said that he tried at some point.
No, he did not. He said he didn't qualify for grants or like the Pell Grant, and he tried a bank loan. That is not the same thing as a student loan.
Oh, okay, gotcha. I get
it. We're all entitled to student loans. Any college kid can take out student loans.
They wouldn't let me take out anymore.
That's because you got to your max amount. But if her parents are having to pay... She could take out student loans.
Which honestly,
take that load off her parents.
Argument. I don't understand, because I see people's credit basically daily. The fact that some of these people have hundreds of thousands of dollars on their credit of student loans and they max me out at 40, very angering.
That's based on, well, yeah, and that wasn't based on your credit though. That's based on what you're doing in school. Like,
no,
it's based on
degrees.
you can take out so much a year.
No, they wouldn't let me take out anything my last year. I was going to have to pay it out of pocket.
You were maxed out then. You had taken out too much in the previous years.
Yeah.
But it's based off of... That happened to me my last year of law school.
But even then...
I hit my max.
But even then,
But it's not based on your credit, and it's not based on your... It's not based on your money, because you're a student. You have no money. They took away my federal work study my second semester of freshman year because I had too many scholarships and also took out student loans on top of those so that I could actually have money to live. So they took away my work study. And I was like, wait a minute, that feeds me. And they're like, well, that's too bad. You can take out more student loans if you want, though.
Yeah, they didn't even give me that option. But even then, like, I've literally seen other people with hundreds of thousands of dollars on their credit and they were not going for something crazy.
Well, it's probably with how many degrees you were trying to do, you probably should have completed one, and then when you reapplied, it would have changed your balance. That's probably what happened. But like, it's not based on your actual finances, because nobody has money because we're all students, and it's not based on your actual credit. It's a formula they use to estimate how much you could need over the 4 years that you'll be at college, sort of thing. But no, but these two could take out student loans.
Yeah.
A bank loan is based on your income and your credit. That's not what he needed to take out. He needed to take out a subsidized or an unsubsidized student loan through the federal government.
Sure.
Even just a little one. Like, he didn't have to take a big one.
True.
And she also could have to take the load off of her parents. So the entire time I was like, clearly, no offense to the author, but evidently you didn't go to college. Or maybe you did and you just didn't realize you could do that too. I don't know. But I took out every single bit of student loans that I could take out in undergrad and law school so that I could survive and not make my family have to pay for it. Because they couldn't pay for it. So, I was distracted by that most of the book, to be honest.
I did have a question for you as far as with Logan. But on the bus, when they're going back to the campus from Harvard, and Logan basically says that he overheard Justin bragging about the date. Do you think he said that as a friend, or do you think he said that to try to get with Hannah?
No, I think he said it as a friend.
Okay.
There's not ever a moment, even in book two, that he actually makes a pass at Hannah. And, okay, because you said you're probably going to forget. What he comes to the realization of is not that he actually wanted Hannah. It's that he wanted what Hannah and Garrett have.
Gotcha.
So it plays out that way eventually. But I don't think it should have ever started out with that, even that possibility that he wanted Hannah, his best friend's girl.
Yeah.
That was weird for me. Unless we're turning it into like a why choose, then I could talk about that trope. But otherwise, no. That's not your friend.
Well, it did make Garrett storm to Hannah's dorm, and he basically demands her to tell him whether or not she's going out with, Justin. And she admits that he did ask her out, but she hadn't decided yet. Garrett is hurt, and he decides that he's basically going to leave. And so Hannah rushes after him, tells him that, he doesn't need to leave in the middle of an argument. And she says that, she decided to cancel it and wants to explore an exclusive relationship with Garrett instead. And so after several weeks, arrives for practice one day, she decides that she's been dropped from the showcase by MJ and Cass, and she now has weeks to prepare a completely different routine. And so she does ask for they basically say that she can have something that she really wants, and she decides to go ahead and take the celloist with her, that was basically being bullied, which go for her. And
I agree.
She does decide to dedicate all of her free time to practicing her original song. And one night Garrett does text her about a loss to one of the teams, and she calls him and decides to sing to him the song that she's doing for the showcase. And Garrett does ask her at the end of the song if she can accompany him with or go with him to his father's Thanksgiving. And she does agree.
Do you know what we did not talk about?
What?
The way he's like obsessed with her singing.
Yes, I did love that.
He's like, I think an angel's in front of me. It's so dramatic, but it's also kind of cute. Nobody would ever say that about my singing.
I wish they would.
Ever. No.
So when they arrive,
I'm not even allowed to sing in the car with the volume too low.
I was also banned from car rides from doing that as well.
So I'm like, okay, then turn it up. Let's let our eardrums bleed because I want to sing.
So when they arrive to Garrett's dad's house, they're kind of very awkward, obviously, because Garrett doesn't want to be there any more than anybody else wants to be there. But while Hannah's kind of making small talk with Cindy, she kind of discovers a couple things about him. So basically, it seems like Phil basically made her sell her company because he missed her too much while she was at work. She talks about she actually moved in with him 2 weeks after they met. And while she's moving around in the kitchen, she actually, one of her sleeves slides up and she finds out that she has bruises on her arm as well. Also at the same time is recognizing the signs that his father's abusive towards Cindy, noticing like she's flinching, things like that. And so, he decides to leave early and he gets into this private conversation with his dad where he's basically saying Hannah's a liability, and Garrett defends her and then also accuses him of abusing Cindy, and he decides to, you know, storm out and to tell her to leave, but he does ask for a moment alone with Cindy, and Cindy flinches from him at some point when he steps closer. And he realizes, you know, she's scared of him as well. And he basically says, you know, I'm not my father. Like, call me if you ever need to leave. Like, I will be here for you.
I fell in love with him in this moment.
Yes, yes. And I did hate, though, whenever he was in that car and he's like, you know, she's afraid of me. Like, she thinks I'm going to be like my father. And I did hurt that. I hurt for him in that moment because I can definitely see where he's probably worked really hard to not be that. To have somebody see that in him could be like a trigger tremendously for him.
Yeah, for sure.
She does also tell him that she loves him. And he does reciprocate it. And he does say, my damn heart near explodes as those sweet three words hang between us. Other girls have said that to me before, but this time it's different because it's Hannah saying it. And she's not just not any girl. And because I know that she says she loves me, she actually means me, Garrett. Not Breyer's hockey star or Mr. Popularity or Phil Graham's son. She loves me. So as she's preparing for the showcase performance, Hannah has several texts from NJ asking to talk. She receives good news that her parents will be able to join her for Christmas. And unfortunately, Garrett can't come because of his hockey schedule. But she does end up at Garrett's hockey game. And she runs into one of her rapist friends that lied for him in court, and is extremely triggering. Garrett ends up walking up to her, sees that she's triggered, and decides to go and kind of confront this guy. He starts hauling insults at Hannah, and he goes to punching this guy, Garrett does. And after several hours later,
I fell even more in love with him in this scene.
I get why he wanted to do it, but I do think that he probably should have listened to her just for the fact that she didn't want it to get any worse. And I could see where she definitely could have thought that it was because it's already pretty bad for her family. So I can understand where she was kind of like, don't do that. But obviously loved the fact that he did anyways, because he felt the need to, you know, stand up for her.
No, I'm going to need me a man that defends my honor. Here's my thing. I'm running my mouth and I'm swinging. So I need me a man that's also ready to do that. Cause if not, we're going to have a problem. I can't be embarrassed cause you can't handle your own self.
True.
So just saying.
Well, and Garrett does get permission from Hannah, whatever his coach is like yelling at him, to tell him about the situation. He also does talk about a situation with Logan as well. And he does apologize to Hannah for losing his temper, and she reassures him that it won't change her feelings or anything like that.
Which he didn't really believe.
No. And then furthermore, whenever she goes to work, basically his dad threatens to cut Garrett off if she doesn't break up with him. So she avoids him. Obviously, it just plays deeper into his insecurities with the fact that she's going to fall out of love with him. And so whenever he confronts her, she just uses the excuse that the relationship's moving too quickly. They need to see other people. And Garrett is extremely heartbroken over this incident. And he decides to drown his sorrows for what seems to be several days. And she kind of also wallows in her self heartbreak. And
okay, but like a week later, him being like, yeah, I don't really believe you. Like, I know you said that, but I don't believe you. And being like convinced to figure out what happened and why she's doing it. I fell in love with him even more. He really got me in the end.
I'm glad it didn't, like, draw out for a really long time either. Because I hate whenever it's, like, a long time breakup and then they, like, see each other again. They're like, why did we even break up in the first place?
Wholeheartedly agree. I will say, though, the hands-off campus-wide thing.
Yes.
So, like, I knew that happened at some point in the book because spoilers on book talk and stuff. But I thought that was, like, a bigger thing. Mm-hmm. Not just, like, a here-and-there passing comment. I thought it was, like, a significant part of the plot.
The only problem I had with that is the fact that, to me, I could see how that could correlate with the fact that the town kind of ostracized her and her family. Like, I could see where that could have become a triggering thing for her. Because it had happened to her in the past, and then all of a sudden, like, nobody's wanting to talk to her after everybody wanted to talk to her.
I see what you're saying. I don't know. I didn't know where you were going there for a second, because that wasn't what I said, so I was confused. But, yes, no, I could see how she could take that the wrong way. Yeah.
Yeah, I
thought it happened, like, 50% into the book, and, like, it lasted for like a good 20-30% till the end and then finally came off. Like, that's, I thought it was like a significant part of the book. Whereas it happened literally in the last 10, if not like 8% of the book.
I thought that actually maybe the dude that raped her like started spreading something since now he knew where she was at. And so I thought that was why people weren't talking to her, is because they found out basically what happened and they heard it from the rapist side and not from the victim side kind of thing. So that was my first thought when she was saying people were ignoring her.
Gotcha. Yeah, see, I already knew the spoiler, so I knew what it was coming. But I do wish it had been earlier on and we had gotten more of it other than just like this passing comment, because it was really cute. This, like, he, like, I think I have it saved as a quote, because he says something along the lines of like, I knew you didn't really want to do that, but I didn't want you to do it, try to prove me wrong and then end up regretting it, so I was just saving you from yourself. And I was like, that's kind of hot that you know her like that, like, you know, I don't know.
Well, and I do love the fact that he does show up for her performance, which of course she gets a standing ovation.
Even when they're not talking?
Yes.
That's so cute.
But she gets a standing ovation because she channels all of her emotions on, you know, her unresolved feelings for Garrett. And as she goes to the bathroom, Garrett, he's kind of, every time they've seen each other, asked her the question, how many men she's dated since the breakup. And she ends up saying, like, I've dated nobody. And he, you know, tells her that he believes that she lied to him. And the real reason, he wants to know the real reason they broke up. And she just kind of, you know, runs away, doesn't say anything more. We end up finding out she doesn't win the contest. But she also runs into him multiple more times. She asks the answer. Her answer remains the same. And she does talk to her mother a little bit, and her mother's basically like, don't let him get away. And so she ends up calling Garrett on New Year's Eve or New Year's Day, because that's his birthday. And he picks up right away and she wishes him a happy birthday. And he does ask her how dating's going, and she lies and says it's going great. And he basically, you know, doesn't believe her. But when she comes back to campus, obviously, you know, everybody's been told to have the hands off. So she ends up finding out at some point that that happened. So she storms into the locker room with a bunch of naked men and goes to confront him, which I really appreciated the coach whenever he was just like, yeah, I don't want anything to do with this. Just
he was like, yeah, never mind.
Let's wrap it up. Let's get this going.
Yeah.
And so it's all grinny, you know, cheery eye that she's figured this out. And he says, you know, he did it for her own good. And he demands why, you know, to know why they broke up. And she admits that his father told her to. And so he gets extremely angry. He tells her to wait outside. He's getting dressed. They need to have a talk. So she is telling everything that happened. And Garrett starts laughing. And he talks about the fact that as of the day after his birthday, he could access the trust and that his father apparently never knew about it because his grandparents didn't want him to take it. And so now financially independent. And so Hannah's very upset because she realizes she broke up with him for no reason. And he's kind of annoyed that she never came to him sooner, but he kind of admitted that he was not well off. So I can kind of see where she came from. But he does end up saying that Cindy did end up breaking up with her father as well. So, you know, now his father's calling him and, you know,
we love that for you, Cindy. We're so proud of you, Cindy.
But they end up reaffirming their love together and, you know, happily ever after. And
aw, so cute.
I do find it weird though that Justin is now a friend of him, but because I feel like he dropped off at some point and we just never really focused on him.
He comes back in book two, but like it's very brief. It's just like a reference that like he's dating, I think it's the Stella girl we met in this book, one of Hannah's other friends. But I don't know why that would matter. It didn't come back up in book two to matter. And it, well, I guess because if Allie and Dean are book three, Allie was in that friend group. So maybe it comes back up in that one. I don't know. But
I just,
it's like one little brief reference that he's dating Stella now and that's it.
Well, I'm not quite sure why he's mentioned coming back if he's not got a book himself.
Well, and so, okay, keep this in mind. She has other series that connect. But my understanding is Briar U is like these couple's kids in the future.
Okay.
Is my understanding. So like Garrett and Hannah's daughter, I think it was, is book one.
Okay.
But I think there's an... She might have another companion series that's football. I don't know.
Can I just say the fact that if we have to read about the child's sex life?
No, we're not. We're not. I'm not reading the child's book.
I just feel like that's weird.
I'm not reading the children's books.
I just feel like that's weird.
I agree. No, I'm not, like, it's not 20 years later and she's wrote the companion series and I can now read about the kids because they should be that old. I can't jump straight from when they're being born, probably in book five, because there's somebody. We know the fourth book has secret pregnancy, yeah. So we know somebody's baby in that one. And then we know somebody's baby in the fifth book, because it says it on the cover. I don't know which one of the couples, but one of them. Probably Garrett and Hannah, considering that's what starts the other series. But I don't know that it's, like, all of their kids, or if it's just, like, a couple kids. I don't know. But I do know that Garrett and Hannah's daughter, I think, I'm pretty sure it's a daughter, starts the first book of Briar U series. I'm not going to read that one. To be honest, I've liked this book. I've not liked it enough other than just to finish this series and be done with it.
Gotcha.
To be quite frank.
Well, I did like kind of the redemption arc that Garrett did have with the fact that he does end up winning the championship. Hannah's obviously there to celebrate with him. And as he's leaving, the entire team basically shuns his father because he did end up telling his teammates and his coach about how abusive his father is. And so that's kind of like Garrett's closure to finally move forward in his life. So,
yeah, I did like that too.
So what's your final thoughts and ratings?
That is a great question. So let me just preface that I really didn't want to rate this book until I've read all five. So it might change for me. So if you see this later on Fable and has a different review, don't hate me. But I kind of wanted to read all five before I rated it. But where I am now with the ending, I think I would give it a 4. So I think I enjoyed it. I wanted to read it. It had parts that could have been done better, but I still did enjoy it overall, and I, by the end, really liked the characters, and, like, look forward to seeing them in the next couple of books as well. So, I landed at a 4. Again, by the time I read the other books, it may change. I don't know. I have read book 2, and book 1, in my opinion, is better than book 2, but book 2 also got better by the end. So, maybe it's just a build-up sort of thing. I don't know. What about you?
So, my ranking system starts at a 3, goes up and down from there. And I have to say, this one was probably a 4.25. So, the best way I can describe it is, I really think if Garrett had a solid direction in where his character was, I think it would have been higher. I think overall, out of the hockey romances I've read, this was a higher ranking one, just because...
Really?
Some of the other ones are not really well written at all. I've read some pretty bad hockey romances. Honestly, that's probably one of the worst genres as far as consistency with how well it's written that I've seen.
Really?
Yeah, there's been some terrible ones that I just read just to get through it. But
I hate that you won't DNF a book.
I hate it too.
It stresses me out.
But I have read some of the best ones that I've read as well. In there as well. So, give or take. So, this was kind of, I would say, kind of like an in-between. Honestly, my biggest complaint is the fact that she didn't know which direction Garrett needed to go. And like you said, even I would have accepted it and been fine with it if he was one way in public and one way in private. That would have honestly settled the whole entire thing for me. But the fact that he was so wishy-washy with every bit of it just was... kind of confusing and whiplashy for me.
So, that's fair.
Yeah.
Okay, well, so if you liked this episode or any of our other episodes, please subscribe to get access to bonus episodes randomly throughout each month or on the 5th Friday if there is one. Our regular episodes will now come out every Friday. What we're doing is still 2 books each month, but we're splitting each book into 2 episodes. We're hoping that, you know, shortening that content will allow you guys to engage more and weekly. On top of that, you can subscribe on Patreon to get access to bonus content, community chat, and more.
You can also send us book suggestions, comments, or general inquiries to our email at likewereadthem@carlmpodcast.com. You can also join us on Fable, Facebook, TikTok, and Instagram for more engagement from us and the latest news. Carl, do you want to let them know what our next read is?
Absolutely. So, on April 4th and April 11th, I guess, we will be discussing Spanish Love Deception by Elena Armas. This, I'm so excited. Like, Allie Hazelwood, Elena Armas, Anna Wang, like, some of my top romance authors, and so I'm really excited for Emily to get into this and see if she enjoys it. The blurb for this book is this. Catalina Martin desperately needs a date to her sister's wedding, especially since her little white lie about her American boyfriend has spiraled out of control. Now everyone she knows, including her ex and his fiancé, will be there and be eager to meet him. She only has 4 weeks to find someone willing to cross the Atlantic and aid in her deception. New York to Spain is no short flight, and her... Rauschus? Family won't be easy to fool. Enter Aaron Blackford, her tall, handsome, condescending colleague, who surprisingly offers to step in. She'd rather refuse. Never has there been a more aggravating, blood-boiling, and insufferable man. But Catalina is desperate, and as the wedding draws nearer, Aaron looks like her best option. And she begins to realize he might not be as terrible in the real world as he is in the office. So, I'm very excited for this. We appreciate you for tuning into this episode. We can't wait to hear your thoughts on this episode and any of our other episodes. Don't forget that you can join us on Fable so that we can discuss as we read. I've been enjoying that a lot. So please, please engage over there. And as always, we promise to Carl and I, we read them.
Damn so.